Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
22-yard attempt, slight angle to his right. Gilligan looks back, now extends the right arm, good snap, put down, kick by Pettigrew is up, and the kick by Jake Pettigrew is good, and the Nittany Lions are on the board. Wide receiver each way with one setback, Pacheco. Sitkowski play action fake, steps up in the pocket, delivers downfield, it's intercepted by John Reed at midfield. John Reed picked it off at midfield for the Nittany Lions, his second of the year, and a flag is down, but it's against Rutgers. Marked it back to the 18-yard line. Motion by Blackshear toward us. Sitkowski goes back. He wants to set a screen. He just throws it away, and Garrett Taylor picks it off at the 25-yard line and out of bounds. Garrett Taylor picked it off, and the Nittany Lions, they blew the screen up. He was trying to throw it away. Marhash attacking the end zone to our right. Give it to Sanders again. Nope. Throw by McSorley. End zone. Friermuth caught. Touchdown. Penn State. Trace McSorley to Pat Friermuth. He laid it right over his shoulder. And the Nittany Lions take advantage of the Garrett Taylor interception and get their first touchdown of the day. The show blitz. They bring it. Back he goes. McSorley with a lot of time. Over the middle. Dotson got it at the 15 and inside the 15. And a first down to the Rutgers 14-yard line. Pettigrew now for the field goal. Attempt put down. Kick is up by Jake, and the kick by Pettigrew is good. Motion toward us. Rashinho takes it. We're going to give the ball at the middle, and that's it. He fumbles the ball. He fumbles the football, and Penn State recovers at the Rutgers 46-yard line. Penn State's Daniel Joseph comes up with the ball. Too far side. It's Hamler and Dotson. Hamler and Tompkins. Dotson's near side. Play action fake, McSorley back, steps out of the pocket, delivers, he's got Friermuth, touchdown, Penn State! James, congratulations on the win, came in, got the job done today. I'd like to start with, you worked so hard on situational football, at the end of the half, you were able to get three out of that. You started with 105, one timeout, you went 79 yards in that one. How did you feel about the play calls and the execution of that?
Yeah, really good. You know, as you guys know, we talk about it a lot, situational football, when to get out of bounds, you know, when to fight for the first down, when to use timeouts, when to milk the clock at the end of the game, the 4 minute, all those types of things. You know, we take a lot of pride in, and, you know, our guys seem to be doing a really good job, and we've had some really good examples. So, you know, that was a big drive in the game. I was very proud of our guys.
James, I thought your defense was outstanding. Talk about the play of Windsor.
Yeah, he's really playing hard right now. His effort is tremendous. He's strong. He's got really good quickness. He's really putting together a really nice second half of the year. I've been very, very pleased with him, you know, in his development.
You talk about the second half of the year. Micah Parsons seems to really start to be comfortable with that linebacker position.
Yeah, as you know, Jack, it wasn't natural to him at first.
Right.
Athletically, not an issue, but, you know, being able to trust his keys and his reads and start to develop some linebacker instincts and things like that, now you're starting to see not only physical traits, but you're seeing a guy that kind of has some understanding, can anticipate what's going to happen based on his keys, and really doing some nice things for us.
Obviously, this will be a week where coming up where the seniors will be a focus. But on this particular day and down this stretch where you've won four of your last five games, James, are you seeing some of the younger players grow up before our eyes?
Yeah, I am. You know, there were some really good examples of guys getting in there. Obviously, Micah, you know, is doing some really good things. Been very, very pleased with him overall. You know, Garrett Taylor, I wouldn't describe as a young player, but playing really well this year as a first-year starter. You know, so there's a lot of positives. I mean, that's a team, you know, Northwestern is playing in a Big Ten championship game, and Northwestern, I think, beat them like 14-18 or something like that. You know, it's been a little time talking this week, too. You know, this team, this Rutgers team in 1988 knocked off a ranked Penn State team, number 14 in the country at the time. So, you know, we talk all the time about respecting every single opponent we play, but fearing none. And I thought our guys did a really good week of preparation against a tough opponent who's playing everybody like that.
I was a witness. Thanks.
Sorry, I don't mean to bring up bad memories, but
guess what? I got good memories from today, though.
Correct. We'll take it. I think the other thing, guys, that I'll leave you with is, you know, we won all those critical stats that we talk about. Our drive start battle, we won that. The turnover battle, we won that. The penalty battle, we won that. The explosive play battle, we won that. You know, when you win those critical stats like that, it puts you in a really good position to be successful.
And that way, when you get in a team meeting and you explain the importance of them, they see all the boxes checked, it tells them something.
There's no doubt. It tells a story.
James Franklin on Saturday after the game with Jack Hamm and me. Yes, we've made this work, Sean. I am in Cancun doing the show today. This show has now gone international. I mean, Lawrence thinks he's international. He's over in Danville. But, you know.
Making a little history today. By the way, that fight got you texted me a photo of how many steps you are from your room to the Gulf of Mexico. Breathtaking shot. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, you can post that in the website or Facebook or whatever. I don't care. Yeah. But, look. I'm so fortunate I get to do what I do. I get to go to the places I get to go to, call games. I mean, I'm in the candy store of jobs, without question. Now doing this, it does come. Now here's the part that in the end, people but remember this too. When I get back Thanksgiving night, I will have been on the road 9 consecutive days. it does come with that. I was home for 13 hours. Got back from Rutgers and then left right away for Mexico. In that time, I was able to get, believe it or not, some sleep, but also a lot of work done. Because there's certain things you have to do before you leave. It's not as simple as like, I'll go to sleep, wake up, and leave. You had to make sure you're ready for the next series of games. The update shows, you just heard the Penn State Sports Network update show. I'll admit to everybody, I recorded all 5 of them Saturday night when I got back. Because the ability to record it here just isn't available. And it's not available to do it the way, that I would like to do it, at least to a standard I'd like to do it. So, they're sitting right now, and I feed them day by day. But, those are certain things you have to do. And then on the plane on the way down, it was about a 3.5-hour flight. Well, that took 3 hours of that 3.5-hour flight, and I was working on the Maryland stuff. On the way down, because that's what I usually do on Sunday, because I already had all the basketball stuff done. I worked Friday night at Rutgers on a lot of basketball stuff, then did the game Saturday. Then I cleaned it up Saturday night when I was done recording the update shows. I cleaned up the basketball stuff to update what Wright State had done in their game against North Florida, to clean up what SMU had done in its game against Lipscomb, to clean up what Bradley had done in its game against UIC. They all played Saturday, so I had to update everything on that. Then when I got on the plane, boom, shift gears and started preparing the Maryland game after that, and I got that all done. Now I can just sit back and watch some practice video and so forth, because I've got I'm fortunate, I've got access to practice video. So actually, it's one of those things where I can sit here tonight and go, okay, let's see what they're doing here, which has helped. Sean and I figured out this Skype thing essentially on our own. He's on vacation, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's on vacation. Now, how does it sound? Does it sound relatively clear?
Or? Yeah, you're clear as a bell. Sounds great.
Yeah. Some guy in I-80 right now, he says, I wish it'd sound worse. let me get into the game on Saturday for a moment. Got a couple minutes here to delve into that. And then we've got Ben Jones today, statecollege.com. Matt Leon today on the Eagles debacle yesterday, and it was a debacle. And then Sean and I want to get into a conversation. We're going to save Emily from the Washington Post. We'll get to her either tomorrow or Wednesday. That sound fair, Sean?
You betcha.
Talk to her about that. But the game on Saturday, number one, the defense turned in another really strong performance. A stat that, certain stats can tell you certain things. And there's certain, and I'll tell you, the guy that turned me on to this stat was Todd Blackledge. Todd really you know, is not a big, like, gigantic stats guy. But then he started talking about stop rate. And I was like, wow, that's a pretty good thing to think about. Because one thing, you know, Todd will be at practice if he's doing a Penn State game. So I get a chance to talk with him, not just on the show. And he, you know, stop rate by a defense. So I incorporated that into my preparation. What is the stop rate by a defense? In other words, any drive that ends without a score. Okay. Well, Penn State this year, defensively, is at 78% right now with its stop rate on defense. In other words, opponents only score 22% of the time against the Penn State defense. Now, imagine being the defensive coordinator in the Big 12. If you got 50%, you got a raise. Now Penn State, in its last three wins, okay, obviously the Michigan game's in the middle of that, so I know that. But in the last three wins over Iowa, Wisconsin, and Rutgers, Penn State's stop rate defensively is 84%. Well, they did it again on Saturday. They had a goal line stand. Now, the goal line stand does come with a caveat. Let's give Rutgers credit. The play that they called on fourth down, they brought Trey Snead into the game, the fourth string tailback. Snead normally wears number four. Now, I knew going in, and the coaching staff did as well, that they had changed his number to 27. I think it had something to do with special teams. But they changed his number to 27. Just like Jabari Butler, instead of wearing 20 on Saturday, wore 25 because of special teams. Because he and Jonathan Thomas are on a couple special teams together now. So they run this play where they put Snead in the slot, only play he played all day. He's left-handed, which is why they wanted to run it. And they ran it perfectly, and you could tell from the time the ball was in the air that Giovanni Rusciano, the quarterback, was fighting the ball the whole time. You could just see it was going to be a disaster. They was going to drop it. You could see it. But they, you know, but the other three plays were just textbook great defense. They get three takeaways. Windsor forced a fumble. Daniel Joseph recovered. Penn State got a touchdown out of that. John Reed had an interception. Garrett Taylor's interception led to a touchdown. Penn State had 14 points off of takeaways. Their defense played really, really well on Saturday. Now let's flip it to the other side, to the offense. And I'll make my offensive point in a moment. Why don't we take a break? Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in summary. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Back with more in a moment here in the mobile and international Sunbury Motors studio on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Even in Mexico, the Shamokin Dam Orchestra sounds incredible.
Bueno.
And you know what's really great about that? Is when you sit down and you think about it, that, you know, the suit's on vacation this week. So the thought of him moonwalking to that, it's eliminated. All right, so. All right, let's get to the offense for a moment. My original question to James Franklin on Saturday was going to be about end of the half and four-minute offense at the end of the game. And I then just changed it to the end of the half. And when I do the pregame show with him and I tape it with him on Friday morning, I'll bring this up. The reason I didn't ask about the four-minute offense at the end was because Miles Sanders fumbled. But look at that drive. I think this is how James Franklin has wanted to play end of games. They went 12 plays. They ate up 5:40 on the clock. And every third down that they had in that drive, Chris Ash of Rutgers called a timeout. which is what he should do. This is not even remotely a criticism of Chris Ash. He was coaching the game the right way. And every time Penn State converted the third down, all three Rutgers timeouts on third down ended up being a Penn State conversion. And the reason I didn't ask him about it was because obviously Miles Sanders fumbled the ball to what, the 15-yard line or whatever it was, right? Which killed it. I mean, they probably, you know, I don't know if James would have taken a knee at the end or not, because obviously at the end he did. Penn State was in the red zone at the end and took a knee. And, you know, it showed, I mean, there's a lot of things. Trace McSorley obviously was not accurate in the first half. I mean, it's an obvious statement. He was not accurate in the first half. All of you know it. You saw it. In the second half, he was, no question, much better. You know, but you know, you look at the end of the half. The end of the half, they went 79 yards in a minute and 5 seconds. They ended up with a field goal. The first down play, I would have run the ball in first down with Miles Sanders. I would have run the ball in that play. Absolutely. Had a timeout in their back pocket because they started the drive with one timeout. They got to the end, they still had the one timeout. So I would have called it there. I would have called the running play because I had a timeout. Then the play to Dotson, you know, they sent both guys in. So Hamler's the slot guy, goes in. They covered Hamler, and he had Dotson. And he threw the ball right, and Dotson, I've never seen Jahan do this. I've never seen him do this before. It's the only time I've ever seen him try to body catch the ball. I was shocked. Because Jahan is the kind of guy, he's such a natural receiver that he always has the hands out front, always. He's a hands out front, which is the way you should be catching the football. Hands out front, boom, snatch, and go. And he tried to body catch it. I don't know why, and he dropped it. Okay, so they ended up settling for the field goal. But that was a really well-called, well-executed drive, which they work on all the time. And then they look at the four-minute offense, where they knocked 5 minutes and 40 seconds off the clock. They converted those third downs along the way. I think that's what he's been looking for, I think. Now, he's not looking for Sanders to fumble the ball, but the other parts of it, the other 11 plays in that drive, absolutely he was looking for that. And that showed me something. Freiermuth's playing really well. Dotson's added a lot to the offense, there's no question. Trace was not accurate in the first half, but Trace was accurate in the second half. And you know what? You've had 132 Penn State football. Okay? No starting quarterback has won the game. He shared that mark with Tony Sack and Todd Blackley. He's accounted for 101 touchdowns in his career. And right now, at this stage of his career, he's got some people that are being a little bit critical of him. Okay. No offense. I don't get it. All right. We'll come back next half hour. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, 406 Matt Leon. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
SMC is where you want to be for your next new F-150 and everything starting with E. Make 2018 a November to remember with savings up to $13,000 on your next new Ford F-150. Sunbury Motors has F-150s starting at $25,669. All SUVs starting with the letter E will plummet in price for SMC's November to remember. 67 Ford Escapes, 23 EcoSports, 22 Explorers, all at one location. Brand new Ford Escapes starting at an unheard of $17,820. If you haven't looked into the all-new Ford EcoSport, now is the time. 2019 Ford EcoSports start at $19,880. SMC has the SUV that started it all, the Ford Explorer, for under $32,000. Hurry in now to SMC so you can show off your brand new Ford at Thanksgiving dinner or to your buddies at Deer Camp. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It is the holiday season. November, by the way, is a big month. December's coming up, which means, guess what? You want to make sure you go out and get yourself a brand new vehicle. That will make the holiday for anybody. And they have great deals at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, we're mobile today in Cancun, Mexico, at Hard Rock Hotel at Riviera Maya. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance. Purdy Insurance has served this valley for decades. Decades, you know, and you don't do that and have that kind of great rapport with your clients unless you have done a great job over the years for your clients. You get repeat business because of the great job that you have done. And that's what they've done at Purdy Insurance. The customer comes first every time. You have a question. There's a great commercial we ran in the summer with Adam Purdy, where Adam says, hey, you know, he's home on a weekend. He gets a call from a client. A problem occurred with the rent-a-car. And what happened was Adam went and checked. He said, look, you're covered. That way the person who called had the peace of mind. That's what I want from my insurance agent. I want my insurance agent to do several things for me. Number one, I want I want to be able to know that I'm getting covered. I'm getting the best possible price, that I'm not getting gouged by anybody, and they'll find you the best price every time. That if I have a question, I want prompt service right away. They do that. And if there's a problem, I want them to go to work for me as if it happened to them. Purdy Insurance checks all the boxes. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. All right. On this day in sports history, then, Ben Jones in a few moments. In 1951, the great Roy Campanella was selected as the National League MVP right on his 30th birthday. Joe Morgan won the MVP in the National League on this date in 1975. Of course, he led the big red machine to the World Series championship that particular year. Let's see. Also in this date in 1986, Muhammad Ali was able to wed Yolanda Williams on this date. And there's a Danica Patrick note in here, but since the suit's not around, we're not going to use it, Sean. We're not going to use it.
Okay.
You know, it's a note.
She's busy promoting websites now, so she's moved on.
You know, what does it tell you? The suit's bought 12 of them. All right. Okay. By the way, we're in Cancun. Tomorrow night will be the coaches' show, by the way. From 6:05 to 7, the basketball tomorrow night. Penn State plays Wright State here tomorrow night at 8:30. What they've done is they've taken the convention hall here, Sean, and, you know, they brought some bleachers. And that's the way it is with all these tournaments. You look at the, you know, the Maui Invitational. You look at the tournament up in Vancouver, Minnesota's in, Battle for Atlantis and so forth. They take the property. They take the ballroom, the convention hall. They bring in some stands and, you know, a couple scoreboards, and they play the game. I'll tell you, the one thing you can't do, say at the end of the half, you want to take and launch, I don't know, 60 to 75-foot shot at the end of the half, you know, which, of course, you know, there's a 1 in 40 chance you're going to make it. You can't do it here. You want to know why? Ceiling's too low.
I noticed that, too, several years ago when they started the Atlantis tournaments. It's like, whoa, that's a low ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, the ceiling's too low, because I was at practice this morning with the team. We were going to do a test of this morning. We finally did it about 12:45, but I was at practice this morning with the team, and that's one thing I noticed right away. Now they weren't practicing that, working that. They were going through their standard practice today like it was a Monday. They'll do a shoot-around tomorrow for the game, but that's one thing I noticed right away. You know, you want to take that old mid-court shot there in the half? No can do. I mean, you could do it, but you better have a little different arc on it than usual. All right, let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome. It's really great to have you with us on the show today.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me.
Ben, what were your initial thoughts on what you watched on Saturday as Penn State went to 8-3?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a pretty game, that's for sure. I mean, you know, you go and you write all these articles afterwards and go, man, I don't know if I want to relive this any more than all these other people, but I think ultimately, you know, you found, a Penn State team that once again found a way to kind of put it all together and enough time to get the ball in the end zone to win. I think Rutgers, obviously, especially on the offensive side of the ball, really didn't have much going in any facet of the game. Penn State defense, I thought, was pretty good. Micah Parsons played well in his first start, but he's been playing pretty well all year, at least the past few weeks. So, you know, I don't think we really learned anything at this point of the year. You know, this team is this team. You know, they're going to play better. They're going to play worse. over, you know, any given week. But I think ultimately you saw more of the same, and Rutgers, you know, quite frankly, couldn't do anything to make Penn State pay for it.
Let's get to the defense for a moment, then I'll get to Micah Parsons more specifically. Defensively, Penn State's stop rate on the season, those are drives that end with no points. Penn State's stop rate in the season is actually an impressive 78%. In their last three wins, that stop rate is 83% in their last three wins. What are you seeing from them defensively that's creating this?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very much just a bend-don't-break kind of unit. And, you know, somewhere Tom Bradley is nodding his head, you know, feverishly about, you know, that that's a successful kind of football. I think they've been able to get sacks. They've been able to get teams off schedule, which is really what teams have been able to do to Penn State on the offensive side of the ball. You've seen successful play at the defensive end position. The linebackers are getting better, and Penn State's been able to force some turnovers. So I think all of those things, combined to the fact, you know, you look at the past 2 weeks, you know, Rutgers is not very good. Wisconsin didn't really have a quarterback. That certainly helps, but I think you look over the course of the season, you're right, that, you know, sometimes Penn State has given up a lot of yards in games, but when they've had to, Penn State's defense has stepped up and has made some plays, and I think that comes with maturity and a lot of these guys getting older and more confident in their roles, you know, especially sort of staying true to their assignments, not doing too much, just sort of sticking to the basics, and it's paying off so far.
So now let's get to Micah Parsons. Obviously, Jack Ham has talked a lot about linebacker development because Micah has been put in a spot he has not played before. So 11 games in, what kind of feel do you think Micah is getting for the position, and what has he said about it?
I mean, he's getting better and better, I think, in terms of his feel. I think his athleticism allows him to make mistakes because he can make up for it with his body and an ability to get to where he needs to be. You know, I talked to Brent Pry before the season about Micah, and really, you know, Brent said that Micah's one of these guys that you can tell him something once or twice, he absorbs it, and he usually doesn't make that mistake again. And I think you're seeing that as the year goes along, because you're right, you know, he never played linebacker. Now he's getting thrown into this role. You know, there are going to be bumps in the road because he's just never done this before. And I think, you know, you've seen as the weeks have gone along, you saw this past weekend that he looks more and more comfortable. He's in the right place at the right time. And now he's being able to use his athleticism, you know, to make plays when he's in position. And that's all the better for Penn State, because ultimately you want your guys in the right place to make those plays. You know, we don't get to talk to Micah because he's a freshman, but we've
heard, that's right.
You
know, that's my fault.
We did. Nick Scott did mention a story after the game, about Micah saying that he wants to be more, you know, he feels like he's an assassin already, but now he wants to be a trained assassin. You know, what you go with that is, up to you, but I think you're seeing him becoming more and more refined in his athleticism. Makes him really exciting to watch, and I think, you know, the better he gets with his fundamentals, the better he'll be on the field.
Yeah, he's really showing that burst, and the burst is being accompanied now by better instincts. I think he's starting to really believe what he sees, because that's one of the keys defensively. If you believe what you're seeing, you go for it right away instead of that hesitation where you have to think for that split second. That's where you get in trouble. Looks like he's now believing what he's seeing.
Yeah, and I mean, that's key. When your mind works quickly, but the game moves slowly in front of you, you know, I think those are two good things to work together. And I think, you know, we've seen it with Penn State linebackers over the years that when they have guys that, you know, don't have to think and can just go make plays, you know, those have been the best linebackers everywhere, certainly at Penn State. And you couple that with what Micah has athletically, and really, you know, he's an exceptionally gifted guy in that area. You know, you're working with a lot of good parts all moving in the right direction.
All right, now let's get to the offense. My first question to James Franklin on Saturday was going to be about the end of the half, which I did ask him about. But then couple that with the end of the game, where they took the ball over with 6:57 to go. They went 12 plays, 40 yards. They knocked 5:40 off the clock. Every time Rutgers called a first a timeout and a third down, Penn State converted it. So I felt like we were watching now what they wanted, that four-minute offense, and combined with what they did at the end of the first half. Then Sanders fumbled the ball, so I felt like I had to withdraw the second part. But still, when you watch that, did it seem like that's what Penn State's been aiming for in that four-minute sense, the way they took care of that 5 minutes and 40 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's you watch it against Rutgers, and, you know, you kind of almost roll your eyes and go, well, you know, you could have used this six games ago or however many it was, you know, against Ohio State or Michigan State. That's really been the thing that I think has been the Achilles heel for this offense, is just this sort of methodical 4 or 5 minute drive where they just grind the ball down the field. And really, you know, it kind of makes sense because the past 2 years, you know, this is an offense that was predicated on the explosive plays, and it's hard to take 5 minutes off the clock when Mike Gesicki's gaining 45 yards in a play. So I think, you know, these sorts of drives are important, though, especially for these younger guys to kind of see, you know, it's a basketball analogy I keep stealing for football, but to see that ball go through the hoop for those sort of situations, right, where you're not trying to, you know, gain 100 yards all at once. You want to get 70 in about 5 minutes or so. We saw it, you know, in the Fiesta Bowl against Washington towards the end of the game. They ended up missing the field goal, but it was a good drive there. We've seen it, you know, over the course of the year at times here. But certainly, you know, for as much as people want to see Penn State be an explosive offense, if you can go out on the field and take 5 minutes off the clock, you're going to win a lot of games, especially if you can put points at the end of it.
Right. They had the lead. That was one of those put the game away kind of drives where, look, you're not going to get it back. Now, eventually they gave it back on the fumble, but they had also eaten up enough time where it gave the opponent no time to do anything. What players stood out to you on Saturday?
You know, I mean, it's sort of a throwaway answer a little bit, but I thought Miles Sanders, for a guy that has been on offense, that has been, you know, up and down and inconsistent and whatever, I think Miles continues to be a guy that Penn State can lean on. And certainly there are a lot of factors into how many yards he's going to gain any play, but I think, you know, he's someone that continues to just go out there and do his job. I think Dotson, I think he continues to look like a guy that really, it's hard to explain, but I just feel like he really attacks the routes. He attacks the ball. He just does everything with confidence. And really, for the amount of talent that Penn State has at the receiver position, for the inconsistencies that they've had, if they can have a guy that can go out there, give you a sharp 7 yard run or route and get you a catch, you know, that'll go a long way. And I think he, you know, as soon as he got plugged in a few weeks ago, really hasn't lost a step and has really looked confident, like he's been playing a lot more. So I think it's pretty much, you know, the guys we've seen all along. I think at this point, kind of like I said, there's not much you're going to learn about this team that we don't already know. There's only one regular season game left. But certainly, you know, I think the biggest thing for Penn State is if your young guys look consistent, they look good week in and week out. You know, that's as important as whatever the result is.
And that one last regular season game is Senior Day at Beaver Stadium when they take on Maryland. Let's start to the Maryland part. They only threw the ball 13 times on Saturday. McFarland had another 200-yard rushing game, but they also gave up a boatload of points. What are your thoughts on Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've seen it from the Penn State side of things over, you know, the past few years that when you have sort of pride on the line and people are pointing at your program for various reasons that you wish they weren't, there's always that going out there with that chip on the shoulder. And I think Maryland probably was going to be a halfway decent team this year, just sort of between the quarterback injuries and everything that happened. It just never really came together, then everything off the field. I think Matt Canada has done a great job with that program. I think, you know, like you said, when you can get that many yards on the ground, you know, you're going to be able to win a lot of football games. But at the same time, you know, they gave up a lot of points. And I think, you know, the best thing for Penn State right now is any team that plays Ohio State that keeps it close is going to be nice and tenderized the next week, you know, when they come to play whoever they've got next. So I think if you're Penn State, you maybe raise your eyebrows a little bit and see what, you know, they did to Ohio State. Certainly, I think Ohio State's probably not quite as good as the record sometimes. But winning is winning. And I think, you know, ultimately this game comes down to the same thing it's been for Penn State all year, is they just can't beat themselves, because when they don't beat themselves, they're more talented than most of the teams they're playing. But when they get in their own way, you know, really anybody can beat them.
Well, Maryland's defense has forced a lot of takeaways this year. And that's how they built their lead in the first half. Then Ohio State scored touchdowns in their last four possessions of the game. That showed me something, because their stop rate is actually only, I think, 64%, 63% of the year. But it's been the takeaways that have been important. Now, against Indiana, they lost because they fumbled the ball. The key is get up on this team, because I don't think they have the passing game to come back and get you.
Yeah, and it's a lot like, you know, to a certain extent what we saw against Wisconsin, which was Penn State gets up in that game. They were happy to run it when it was still a game, but then once you have to throw it, you know, clearly maybe things are different with Hornibrook, but, you know, they get in a situation where you make a team do something that it's not, you know, comfortable doing, and you've got to feel pretty good about yourself. And you're absolutely right. You've got to avoid those turnovers. You know, you've got to avoid those red zone fumbles. And if you can do that, you can put a Maryland team away. But, you know, the longer they hang around, the more confident they are. Sometimes it only takes one blocked field goal to get returned to win a game.
Yeah, exactly right. And the other part, too, is they, well, when they do throw it, they get some big plays in the pass game because they're expecting you to run it. And that's where you've got to be, you know, you've got to be able to read your keys in the secondary on these guys, which will be very important. Senior day, what do you think this senior class has meant for Penn State?
Well, I mean, I think it sort of goes without saying when you look at, you know, some of these guys that are going to be graduating, and you know, Trace is kind of the obvious one here, but they've seen it all. You know, I talked to Nick Scott a couple weeks ago, and he's one of these few guys that was left over from, you know, probably the bottom of what it was like to be on a Penn State football team under sanctions, and then he's gone on to win a Big Ten title, has played as well as he had, and now he's, you know, starting in a bigger and bigger role. So I think these guys, you know, they mean a lot. Do they mean the same as much as Hack and those guys? I think they just mean different things. I think ultimately,
right. That's right.
You know, it's just if Hack and that class got them to this point, these guys got it across the finish line. So I think there's you know, it goes without saying that, you know, Penn State's going to miss all of these seniors. They're going to miss Trace McSorley, but, you know, you look at those recruiting rankings, it's certainly not a shortage of you know, talent coming in behind them.
Which is not exactly right. And now let's get to the basketball part of it, because I know you follow it intently. This tournament down here in Cancun, they've got Wright State tomorrow, which is 3-1, Bradley and SMU in the other half of the bracket. What's your thoughts on this tournament and the basketball team we've seen so far here?
Yeah, I mean, I said it after the game a couple nights ago that, you know, is that a game that, you know, DePaul, that they wish they had won and probably should have won? And you go, yeah, but at the same time, there's so many positives about the sort of feeling that this team has. I think tournaments like this are good for, you know, playing some teams that are going to be pretty good, getting some time together on the road with your teammates as you sort of integrate a lot of new guys. And it's really, you know, I think the biggest thing we've seen from these freshmen is we know that all of these guys can shoot. We know all of them can score. You know, can they do it consistently night in and night out? Because what made Tony so good, what made DJ so good, was the fact that they were giving you pretty much the same thing every single night. And if you can get that from Miles Dredd, if you can get that from Razier Bolton, you know, Penn State's got a team right now that's got probably four different guys that can give you 20-plus on any given night. If you can get that from, you know, two or three of them, and then you can get the depth behind them, you know, you've got yourself a pretty good team. So I think this sort of tournament, you know, obviously the winning and the playing is what really matters. But ultimately, if you're talking about these sorts of things, getting you ready for conference play, it's about the details. It's about the consistency. It's about the chemistry. And, you know, I'm walking downtown right now. It's raining and nasty. You know, it might also be about getting a tan a little bit.
Well, you know what? I would be shocked if Bolton had another 0 for 9. Be shocked. I mean, he's too good of a player to have that happen to him again.
He's going to be great.
Yeah, no, I mean, really, I don't know you, Ben. I'm just really impressed with him. And if he had an 0 for 9, I really would be shocked if he had a second consecutive one, because he had an 0 for 10 night and he was 0 for 6 in threes. You could just see, and now obviously I have a little bit better view because you can read faces a little bit easier when you're sitting next to the bench. The game went, you could just see his face like, I can't believe this is happening to me.
Yeah, no, it's wild. I said to somebody, you know, he's played three games at Penn State, and that might be the worst he ever plays in 4 years if he's there that long. So, you know, certainly the sky's the limit for that kid.
I agree with you. Ben, thanks so much for your time, as always. Thank you. Appreciate it very much. And happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Yep, you too, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Ben Jones, statecollege.com. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Just search Steve Jones Show. We got 3 months of shows always archived as well at stevejonesshow.com. And yeah, making a little history today. First time ever doing the show from Mexico.
Yes, not Mexico, Pennsylvania.
No.
No. We are actually here in Cancun in the Yucatan Peninsula. And yeah, so that's what we're looking at. This is the weather's gorgeous here, which is great. Love it. And we have more next half hour. Matt Leon. Matt will join us to talk about the Eagles debacle yesterday. And also a little bit about Jimmy Butler with the Sixers. Here's the other part, too. I know, Sean, you wanted to get into Ben Roethlisberger being a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I think he absolutely is, but we'll get into it a little bit more. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The mobile Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.